to watch the broadcast of the NASA astronauts stepping onto the moon. Their successful mission to the moon bolstered support for NASA, and soon other space attempts were made, including the creation of Skylab, the first and only independently built spacecraft by the U.S. Much later, it would also give birth to the Space Shuttle program, which would send up numerous spacecraft and increase our understanding of the universe beyond the atmosphere. Every subsequent satellite humans have sent into the darkness owes its existence to the adventure and sense of wonder that was exercised back in the 1960s. And today, the most modern incarnations, including the Mars rover and the International Space Station, are representative not only of the United States' role in this endeavor, but of a global effort to expand our knowledge and our bounds. Fun facts. Space race veteran Alan Shepard was the fifth man to walk on the moon, but he was the first to play sports on the lunar surface. After landing the Apollo 14 lander in what was the most accurate landings in NASA history thus far, he then proceeded to hit two golf balls. The second one, Shepard said, traveled for miles. The one thing that surprised many of the astronauts who walked on the moon was not the captivating beauty of the landscape, but rather the smells. In other words, the moon stinks. It has been likened to the burnt smell of gunpowder. This is one not-so-fun fact. Even though the Soviet Union claimed that Laika, the dog that was on Sputnik 2, survived for almost a week in orbit, some reports said that the poor dog only managed to live for a couple of hours and died because the cabin got too hot. The Civil Rights Movement. An accurate account of American history is not complete without dedicating a chapter to the fight for civil rights. After the Civil War, slaves were free, but there was still the question of how the newly free slaves should be treated. 3 years after the abolition of slavery, the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was passed. The amendment dealt with citizenship and proclaimed that no state could deprive a citizen of their rights or privileges. The amendment also goes on to describe exactly what it means to be a United States citizen. In 1870, another important amendment was added to the Constitution. The 15th Amendment gave American citizens the right to vote regardless of their race. Even though it was in the Constitution, this was not well received in all of the states. The amendment did not even apply to women at this time. The same year that the 15th Amendment was ratified, the South started to pass laws that became known as the Jim Crow era. Jim Crow laws were simply segregation laws that separated white American facilities from black American facilities. Naturally, this led to some negative encounters. In 1891, the landmark Plessy v. Ferguson court decision took place. Homer Plessy, an African American passenger on a train, refused to sit in the back of a Jim Crow car. The state of Louisiana, specifically Judge Ferguson, declared that Plessy had broken the law refusing to do so. Plessy argued that his constitutional rights, specifically those outlined for citizens in the 14th Amendment, permitted him to sit where he wanted. The case made it to the Supreme Court, and a 7-1 vote stated that the state of Louisiana was within its authority to separate amenities as long as they were of equal proportion. Therefore, the so-called separate but equal doctrine that would grow to be a big deal, particularly in the southern states, came to life. The next 50 years were plagued with racism, discrimination, and for many African Americans, lynching. Although things were considered separate but equal, there was a clear difference between facilities for the races. School systems in black communities were poor and had low-quality materials compared to their white neighbors. Buses, trains, and even restrooms were completely separated. Even with groups such as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, fighting for equal rights, the United States did not see a whole lot of change. W.E.B. Du Bois, who was an activist in the civil rights movement, played a major role in trying to force the states to comply with the federal law. The middle of the 19th century saw the major moves in the fight for basic civil rights. Many key events occurred during this time that would forever shape the future of the nation. The first key event was Executive Order 9981. Before going into the details of this particular presidential act, it is first important to know what was occurring in history at this time. In the beginning of 1942, World War II was well underway and the United States had entered into the European scuffle. Many Americans had reservations about having to go to war and fight for a country in which they were only considered half-citizens. As a result, a movement started called the Double V Campaign. The Double V Campaign referred to African-American men who were enlisted in the Army seeking to have two victories. The obvious victory referred to the one abroad for which they were fighting with the country's allies. Another more personal victory would be achieved at home, and gaining black Americans equal treatment regardless of their race or skin color. Arguably, this moment helped shape the president's concerns over equality in the military. Now we return to Executive Order 9981. This declaration, which was enacted by President Truman in July of 1948, stated that there would be integrated units in the armed forces. In other words, the military could be no longer segregated. This was a big deal since the separate but equal doctrine was still in full effect at this time. Through the eyes of an eyewitness, the temperature hit 90 degrees. Everybody was sweating. "Freedom! Freedom!" a roar arose from the church. The cops, almost as one, faced the church. Some unleashed clubs from their belts. The faces of those I could see had turned crimson. Jeremiah X, Muslim minister from Atlanta, standing near me, commented, "At any moment, those cops expect 300 years of hate to spew forth from that church." "Y'all niggers go on back. We ain't letting no more get on these steps," a police captain ordered as I approached the church. I turned away. The time was 1:10 p.m. Four fire engines arrived at the intersection and set themselves up for business. Each disgorged its high-pressure hoses, and nozzle mounts were set up in the street. I was to learn the reason for the mounts later, when I watched the powerful water stripping bark off trees and tearing bricks from the walls as the firemen knocked Negroes down. Before I could get back to the motel, the demonstration began. 60 demonstrators were on their way, marching two abreast, each with a sign bearing an integration slogan. Dick Gregory, the nightclub comedian, was leading the group. At a signal, 40 policemen converged, sticks in hand. Up drove yellow school buses. "Do you have a permit to parade?" asked the police captain. "No," replied Gregory. "No what?" asked the captain, in what seemed to be a reminder to Gregory that he had not used a sir. "No, no, a thousand times no," Gregory replied. Captain said, "I hereby place you all under arrest for parading without a permit, disturbing the peace, and violating the injunction of the Circuit Court of Jefferson County." Bedlam broke loose. Len Holt.
6 years later, another major point in American history occurred that would once again have an impact on the nation's future. Most communities at this time had racially segregated school systems. Many blacks felt that their schools were not equal to white schools and so sued on the grounds that not allowing their children to go to school was a violation of the 14th Amendment. While the case lost in the district court, it eventually made its way to the United States Supreme Court. Shockingly, the justices unanimously agreed that the state racial segregation of schools was indeed unconstitutional, and the earlier decision of Plessy v. Ferguson was now undone. A year later, the ruling went on to say that states should start integrating the schools with all deliberate speed. Now that integration was required in the school system, it seemed like things were starting to take a turn for the better for African Americans. Unfortunately, that was not the case. In fact, racial tensions became even higher after the decision due to the resistance of white supremacists and ordinary Americans when African Americans attempted to exercise their rights through any type of integration. However, the school system was just one of many institutions that would soon see a movement away from segregation. In December of 1955, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white male on a public transportation system bus. As a result, she was arrested. Now, the civil rights movement was receiving more support and the Montgomery bus boycott began. A major player in the civil rights movement, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., joined the boycott and preached on the importance of nonviolent protest and demonstrations in order to bring about social change. While Dr. King was leading the group, he was arrested, abused, and even had his home bombed. One of his most famous moments was when he led thousands of African Americans on a march from Selma, Alabama, to Montgomery, Alabama, so that the individuals would have the opportunity to exercise their right to vote. Despite all that he went through, he never steered away from his beliefs, and he became an iconic figure in not just the African American community, but in the United States as well. He received countless gestures of recognition for his efforts, including the Nobel Peace Prize. While Martin Luther King preached nonviolence and peaceful protest in order to bring about social change, another man had a different approach. Malcolm Little, who the world knows as Malcolm X, believed that the African Americans should seek their civil liberties and demand that they receive social justice by any means necessary. There was no question that Malcolm X represented a more radical version of the civil rights movement. His ideals were important because they embodied an American belief that no one should let go of their freedom or civil liberties without a fight. Through the eyes of an eyewitness. While confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling our present activities unwise and untimely. Seldom, if ever, do I pause to answer criticism of my work and ideas. If I sought to answer all of the criticisms that crossed my desk, my secretaries would be engaged in little else in the course of a day except answering, and I would have no time for constructive work. But since I feel that you are men of genuine goodwill and your criticisms are sincerely set forth, I would like to answer your statement in what I hope will be patient and reasonable terms. You may well ask, why direct action? Why sit-ins, marches, and so forth? Isn't negotiation a better path? You are exactly right in your call for negotiation. Indeed, this is the purpose of direct action. Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and establish such creative tension that a community that has consistently refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. It seeks so to dramatize the issue that it can no longer be ignored. I just referred to the creation of tension as part of the work of the nonviolent resistor. This may sound rather shocking, but I must confess that I am not afraid of the word tension. I have earnestly worked and preached against nonviolent tension, but there is a type of constructive nonviolent tension that is necessary for growth. Just as Socrates felt that it was necessary to create a tension in the mind so the individual could rise from the bondage of myths and half-truths to the unfettered realm of creative analysis and objective appraisal, we must see the need of having nonviolent gadflies to create the kind of tension in society that will help men to rise from the dark depths of prejudice and racism to the majestic heights of understanding and brotherhood. So, the purpose of direct action is to create a situation so crisis-packed that it will inevitably open the door to negotiation. We therefore concur with you in your call for negotiation. Too long has our beloved Southland been bogged down in the tragic attempt to live in monologue rather than dialogue. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Letters from a Birmingham Jail. In 1964, the 24th Amendment to the United States Constitution was passed, outlawing the poll tax. The poll tax was something that had been put in place that prevented a large number of African Americans from having the ability to vote. This was a huge win for the civil rights activists. The same year, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed. This piece of legislation was important because it forbid the use of segregation in numerous public institutions, including hotels, jobs, and schools. Segregation involved not just race, but also religion, color, sex, etc. The act was expanded in 1965 to include a Voting Rights Act, which was specifically created to bring equality to African Americans. African American voters had been subject to obstacles such as literacy and history tests they were required to pass if they wanted to have the right to vote. The Voting Rights Act eliminated the use of such tests. The legal segregation of American citizens had finally reached an end. The Vietnam War. The Vietnam War was not technically a war, but from the period of 1954 to 1973, the United States aided the Republic of South Vietnam in a conflict against the communist North Vietnam. This is sometimes known as the Second Indochina War and is a direct result of the First Indochina War between colonial ruler France and communist military forces. Congress never voted on whether or not to engage in the war, thus by the terms set by the American government, the United States was never actually engaged in the war in an official congressional capacity. The war was considered part of the Cold War as it was based in fighting communism, but it was a bloody violent war that stretched beyond the Vietnamese border into Cambodia and Laos. The National Liberation Front of North Vietnam was known as the Viet Cong, and there was aggressive fighting on both sides. The conflict was particularly bloody and raw, and both sides engaged in brutal tactics. There was fighting in the dense jungles and in the cities as well. One tactic the U.S. chose to use was to spray a defoliant over the jungles to kill off crops that the Viet Cong used for cover. This organized campaign was called Operation Ranch Hand and sprayed over 4.5 million acres of land with a herbicide known as Agent Orange. Agent Orange contained dioxin, a very effective herbicide that scientists later learned caused cancer, birth defects, and psychological issues, among other things. This impacted U.S. troops, their families, and most of all, the Vietnamese. The Gulf of Tonkin incident, also known as the USS Maddox incident, occurred early in August of 1964. Until this point, the United States had largely served a quieter, more economic role in aiding France, and later South Vietnam. The USS Maddox was primarily an espionage ship that relayed information to the South Vietnamese. The Maddox was on its way towards islands in the Gulf of Tonkin that U.S.-supported patrol boats had shelled only a few days before. Three Soviet-made North Vietnamese boats greeted the Maddox. The Maddox then fired warning shots. The North Vietnamese boats returned fire and the Maddox emerged without damage. Supposedly, on the following day, the Maddox was attacked by torpedo boats. It has since been stated by the U.S. military that this second attack did not take place. The United States blew the Gulf of Tonkin incident out of proportion in order to pass the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which expanded America's military role in Vietnam. Once the U.S. declared its intentions, it pushed out the air bombardment campaign known as Operation Rolling Thunder. Historians debate how effective this campaign was. Joint Resolution. To promote the maintenance of international peace and security in Southeast Asia, resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that Congress approve and support the determination of the President as Commander-in-Chief to take all necessary measures to repel any armed attack against the forces of the United States and to prevent further aggression. From the transcript of the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, 1964. Possibly the most atrocious act that occurred during the conflict was what was known as the My Lai Massacre in 1968. A group of American soldiers killed between 350 and 500 unarmed civilians located in a small village in Son Mai. Men, women, and even children were victims. The soldiers were led to believe that a missing Viet Cong battalion was hiding in the hamlets, but again, there were only unarmed civilians. The outcome was brutal, and when news of the event came out, opposition against the war grew even stronger. The Vietnamese celebrated a holiday called Tet, which celebrates the Lunar New Year. The North Vietnamese engaged in a somewhat surprise attack on that holiday known as the Tet Offensive. This was a coordinated attack on over 100 South Vietnamese cities and towns with the intent to sway South Vietnamese people and encourage U.S. withdrawal of support. This was considered a success for the North Vietnamese despite the fact that many lives were lost. And this became a major turning point in the war leading towards U.S. withdrawal from the area in 1973. Through the eyes of an eyewitness, we found that not only was it a civil war, an effort by a people who had for years been seeking their liberation from any colonial influence whatsoever, but also we found that the Vietnamese, whom we had enthusiastically molded after our own image, were hard put to take up the fight against the threat we were supposedly saving them from. We found most people didn't even know the difference between communism and democracy. They only wanted to work in rice paddies without helicopters strafing them and bombs with napalm burning their villages and tearing their country apart. They wanted everything to do with the war, particularly with this foreign presence of the United States of America, to leave them alone in peace, and they practiced the art of survival by siding with whichever military force was present at a particular time, be it Viet Cong, North Vietnamese, or American. We found also that all too often American men were dying in those rice paddies for want of support from their allies. We saw firsthand how monies from American taxes were used for a corrupt dictatorial regime. We saw that many people in this country had a one-sided idea of who was kept free by the flag, and blacks provided the highest percentage of casualties. We saw Vietnam ravaged equally by American bombs and search-and-destroy missions, as well as by Viet Cong terrorism. And yet we listened while the country tried to blame all of the havoc on the Viet Cong. We rationalized destroying villages in order to save them. We saw America lose her sense of morality as she accepted very coolly a My Lai and refused to give up the image of American soldiers who hand out chocolate bars and chewing gum. Vietnam Veterans Against the War, Statement to Congress by John Kerry, April 23, 1971. The war was highly unpopular in part due to the military draft imposed on eligible men. Men were forced into service abroad while protest waged at home. Veterans returned home only to be scorned by American protesters who were putting increasing pressure on the government to act. Ultimately, the conflict was responsible for taking 3 million lives, including 58,000 Americans. After the United States withdrew troops from the region in 1973, the North and South Vietnamese continued to fight for 2 more years until the fall of Saigon in 1975. The economic and social pressures of Vietnam, combined with the growing civil rights movement and women's rights movement, created an intense period of social change in the 1960s. Nixon and the Watergate scandal. Richard Milhouse Nixon was quite the president. During his first term, Nixon presided over the Apollo 11 space mission, which ultimately finished the space race between the USA and the Soviet Union, and he also ended American involvement in the Vietnam War and ended the military draft practice. He was so good at the job that he got reelected in one of the largest landslide victories in the history of the U.S. However, things started to unravel for President Nixon in the 70s. Before the fall. Richard Milhouse Nixon actually had a lot of achievements under his belt even before he became president for the first time. He was on active duty in the Navy Reserve during World War II. His rabid pursuit of the Hiss case, where an American government official was accused of being a Soviet spy, cemented his reputation for being anti-communist and thereby gained prominence among the American people. With the atmosphere in the United States reflected in McCarthyism and a sense of trying to unify the country against a singular and oftentimes vaguely obscured threat, it was the perfect environment for Republicans such as Nixon to gain support. Despite narrowly losing the presidential race to John F. Kennedy in 1960 and losing the California gubernatorial race to Pat Brown in 1962, Nixon still tried to run for the top office in 1968, and he finally won after he defeated Hubert Humphrey. Discovery and conviction. In 1972, 5 people were arrested when they broke into the Democratic National Committee's headquarters at the Watergate office complex in the Capitol. It turned out that the burglars were actually people who had ties to the CIA and other government agencies and that they were sent there to plant microphones and steal confidential documents. The Democrats suspected that Nixon had a hand in the break-in, but they had no hard evidence that linked him to the crime. After some time had passed, a mysterious informant with the codename Deep Throat surfaced. He/she knew that Nixon did have a hand in the Watergate break-in, and what's more, that he had employed other dirty and illegal tactics against his political opponents. Deep Throat, who would later be identified as Mark Felt of the FBI, actually provided solid evidence linking Nixon to the Watergate scandal, which prompted Congress to investigate. In the midst of the investigation of Watergate, numerous other politicians and government officials received indictments for their involvement. Public outcry led to multiple impeachment claims and calls for Nixon's resignation. Despite losing support from the Democratic side, and even from his own party, Nixon denied any wrongdoing on his behalf or any knowledge of the break-ins. It all came to a head when the impeachment hearings got hold of a tape, very famously referred to as the smoking gun tape, which proved Nixon knew of the break-in to bug an opponent's office and had actively encouraged attempts to thwart the investigation. It was the last nail in the coffin, and after more than a year of public indignation, Nixon resigned from his post as the President of the United States. Did Nixon get convicted for the Watergate scandal? No. When Gerald Ford took over the reins of the presidency after Nixon resigned, he granted the former president a presidential pardon, which means that Nixon gained immunity for the crimes that he was supposed to be tried for. Nixon's reputation never really recovered after Watergate. His fall from grace was very abrupt. One year he was the darling of the people, and the following one he was the devil incarnate. Until now, when you ask people who they think was the worst president in U.S. history, they would most likely say it was Nixon. Ever since Watergate, every national scandal that has surfaced has almost always had "gate" suffixed to it. End of the Cold War and beginning of Pax Americana. The 1980s witnessed various events pertaining to the Cold War. It was only natural that the ideological war between the world's two superpowers would influence the world, and the United States was one of those superpowers. One way the United States pressured the Soviet Union was through spending, as the Soviet economy was much weaker than that of the United States. MAD and the Strategic Defense Initiative. The doctrine of mutually assured destruction, MAD, or MAD, formed the basis of the U.S.-Soviet relationship for most of the Cold War. The concept claimed that a nuclear nation would not attack another as it would certainly receive retaliatory strikes against its own lands. The concept may have indeed been a mad one, but it kept nuclear war from ever breaking out. The U.S. President Reagan, however, was not a proponent of the scheme and wanted to implement a defense doctrine as well. His plan was the Strategic Defense Initiative. The defense included land and space-based methods to eliminate the Soviet threat. Many critics of the initiative feared it would destabilize the delicate balance afforded by MAD, the notion that if both powers did not go to power with nuclear weapons, it would matter not who shot first, because both sides would effectively annihilate each other. If the Soviets were suddenly disabled from attacking the U.S. because of defense, the offensive MAD doctrine would no longer apply. That would make the Soviet Union vulnerable to an American attack without the deterrent of a return strike. Many thought that this would force the Soviets to act preemptively and start a nuclear war. Furthermore, the futuristic style of the initiative resulted in it being named the Star Wars Defense, named after George Lucas's Star Wars movies because of its use of lasers. While the Star Wars program did not ever gain much traction under his terms of office, it and other programs implemented by Reagan forced the Soviet Union to spend heavily on military research, and this is partially credited with the fall of the USSR. Later, when Bill Clinton entered into office, the program would be overhauled again, this time turned into the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization, or BMDO. As the name suggests, it was more heavily focused on defense of possible missile attack. Elements of Reagan's old SDI program are still relevant in today's military research, and there is even a plan to institute a laser-based defense system around 2020. End of the USSR and the beginning of global American dominance. The crumbling of the Berlin Wall in 1989 foreshadowed the crumbling of the Soviet Union in the coming years. The void left behind was less dangerous than it could have been. The extensive stockpile of nuclear weapons in Russia and other former Soviet states remained surprisingly protected, and, while the general population suffered from extreme hardship, the weapons were not sold off or misplaced during the ensuing chaos. Once the USSR was dissolved, there was no longer a challenger to American power. The old powers of Europe had long ago ceased to play as central a role as their offspring, America. Russia was a husk of its former glory as the USSR, China was nowhere near as industrialized as it currently is, and the European Union, even today, cannot muster hard power like the United States. Sometimes it cannot even keep its own members, as Brexit demonstrated. This military dominance has given way to the Americanization of the globe. The United States became the sole power at a time when the globe was becoming increasingly connected. Today, the world is highly interconnected through trade, finance, and communication. The Internet, the rise of which is nothing short of a revolution, instantly connects people from all over the world. Although the Internet was not as widespread in the 1990s as it is today, American culture was still exported en masse to the rest of the world. Entertainment, consumerism, advertising, and American-style democracy has been exported to nations the world over, and without the end of the Cold War, this development would never have taken place. The relative peace through the world following the end of the Cold War was nicknamed Pax Americana, after the similar peace throughout the Roman world when Rome controlled much of Europe and North Africa. The United States worked to democratize various nations and incorporate such nations into the global economic system. The result is the modern globalized world. There were still wars, even within the borders of largely peaceful Europe, but they have not been on the scale of previous wars, especially the world wars. That said, the geopolitical spectrum in regards to the U.S. took a very drastic turn on September 11, 2001, when a terrorist attack involving two planes ended up bringing down the World Trade Centers in New York. This attack, carried out by members of Al-Qaeda, had the effect of suddenly humbling the U.S. again, in much the same way that Pearl Harbor brought the U.S. out of its insulated world perspective, so too did 9/11 come as a reminder that there was a great amount of strife and political conflict outside their borders. The effect of this terrorist attack on one of the primary capitals and symbols of America's values cannot be underestimated. Security in general increased amazingly as people felt that they were no longer safe, and this prompted a number of incursions in military campaigns, especially in Iraq and Afghanistan. Through the eyes of an eyewitness, on Tuesday morning at 8:46 p.m., I was in 2 World Trade Center on the 64th floor where I used to report to work from Morgan Stanley. I was sitting at my computer reading the BBC on the Internet about the problems in Israel when I heard an explosion. I remember that I thought it was a bad explosion because I heard the backup generator kick in within seconds of that initial impact. I jumped up and ran to one of the unoccupied offices that had a window and looked out to see large amounts of debris, paper, metal, all kinds of things, floating down towards the street. I ran back into my office and called my boss on his cell phone and told him, "Don't come in here because there was an explosion and we are beginning to evacuate." And I hung up the phone and ran back out into the hallway. At that moment, someone called out to me, "Is there anyone else down there?" "Yes," I said, and he yelled at me to get my ass into the stairwell because we were evacuating. I did as told. We had reached either the 51st or the 50th floor when we heard a huge explosion which shook the building like crazy. I grabbed hold of the stairwell to steady myself when a woman who had fallen from a flight up hit me in the back and sent me down a flight of stairs with her on my back. I then tried standing up, but the building was still shaking and the lights were flickering on and off. It was terrifying. Then the building began to sink. That's the only way I can describe it. The floors began to lower under my feet, and all I could think about was that it would crack open and I would fall hundreds of feet to my death. Eric Levine, from an interview with BBC News. Misconceptions. Malcolm X did not believe in attacking whites. Activist Malcolm X, born Malcolm Little, argued that the black community should not be afraid to fight back, but he did not advocate for attacking the government or acting as the aggressor. He believed that blacks should not be afraid to defend themselves with violence, but specified that it shouldn't be the first step. Can you believe this actually happened? What was the first animal to go into space? A. A chimpanzee. B. A cat. C. A dog. D. An insect. Answer. The Soviet Union, after launching Sputnik 1 in 1957, launched Sputnik 2 into space with an animal on board. The animal was Laika, a dog, and the Soviets became the first to send a living organism into orbit. The Soviets made an initial claim that she survived for several days in orbit, but she unfortunately died within hours due to overheating. The Equal Rights Amendment was signed into law in 1971. A. True. B. False. Answer. False. Congress passed the Equal Rights Amendment in 1971, but it did not receive enough votes for ratification by the individual states. The Equal Rights Amendment would explicitly guarantee equal rights to all persons, regardless of gender. History has its eyes on us today. Much of what transpired over the latter half of the 20th century still resonates with the American public today. The space race has mostly dwindled into private enterprises like SpaceX, but the International Space Station conducts long-term studies. The Civil Rights Movement produced one of the most important pieces of legislature in American history, the Civil Rights Act. Although the country has made great progress towards racial equality, there is still racial tension today. If the choice were yours, would you have engaged in the Vietnam War with or without the support of Congress? The president is not allowed to declare war on another country without the official support of Congress. The Vietnam War is actually a misnomer, as war was not officially declared, so sometimes you will see reference to Vietnam as a conflict. The conflict was costly, both economically and in lives, and was highly unpopular. Chapter 8. America Today. Political Parties. Political parties in the United States have undergone numerous changes through the years, but in general, the goals of each was to establish a democracy that helped everyone and would see to the interests of all citizens. There were usually two main parties, a form of government that has come to be known as bipartisanism. Nevertheless, there have been plenty of historical parties in the past, and we'll now take a look at them and at the current form of government. Interestingly enough, the nation's earliest leaders were quite leery about the idea of political parties, or factions as they were referred to in the past. Before leaving the political scene, George Washington warned the people of America against factions. James Madison, the grandfather of the Constitution, did not approve of them, but thought that they would be necessary. Thomas Jefferson was said to have declared in 1787 that if his only way to enter heaven were by being part of a political party, then he would not go at all. Despite the Founding Fathers' strong feelings against the formation of political parties, they were still the first ones to shape them. The first two political parties in the United States were the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist parties. The Federalist Party, led by Alexander Hamilton and John Adams, wanted a strong central government with limited state power. Federalists also believed that it was not only necessary to put a Bill of Rights in the Constitution and opposed the Articles of Confederation. The primary supporters of this deal were large farmers, merchants, and artisans. They believed that most of the government power should be left in the hands of the elite, well-educated, and wealthiest. The party fell after the War of 1812. The Anti-Federalist Party opposed a large central government because they believed that too much national power would greatly diminish the power of the states. Naturally, they believed in strong state power, a Bill of Rights to protect the individuals within the states, and that the Articles of Confederation needed to be amended and not eliminated. The Anti-Federalist Party drew most of its support from small farmers in rural areas. They were later renamed the Republican Party because they reflect the idea of a strict interpretation of the Constitution along with the state's rights over national influence, Republicanism. The Federalist Party later changed their name to be Democratic Republicans as a way to try to discredit the Republican Party. This goes back to the French Revolution when rebels tried to justify their actions in the name of democracy. The name stuck, so the Republicans formally changed their name to Democratic Republicans. The Toleration Party was started back in 1801 and has actually held power to the present day. They were heavily weakened by the War of 1812 when the Federalist perspectives it held dear began to decline. They were also once affiliated with the Democratic Republican Party. The anti-Masonic party came about in response to what they feared was an excess of Freemasonry, especially in the higher echelons of government. Recall that a number of the founding fathers had Masonic ties. They came to power and only lasted a little over a decade, but they did manage to introduce some significant changes in government, such as the idea of party platforms, which is still an element of political discourse today. It was also the first ever third party to be created within the U.S. The Nullifier Party had as their goal the ability to nullify federal law within states. This would have given more power to regional lawmakers, and as the party was founded in South Carolina, it would have come as no surprise that they wanted to try and separate from government intervention during the 1800s. A few third parties would pop up from time to time to try to make a difference in American history. One such party was that of the Progressive Bull Moose Party. The Progressive Party was created by Theodore Teddy Roosevelt in 1912 because he did not receive the nomination for the Republican Party. As the name implies, the progressives wanted some pretty big reforms, including social welfare assistance to women and children, women's suffrage, banking reform, workers' compensation, and health insurance. In the one presidential election that they had a candidate in, they lost. Another short-lived party was the Free Soil Party, which was born during the election of 1848. The party developed partially from a major political rivalry in the state of New York. It was built on a coalition of barn burners, conscious Whigs, Free Soil Democrats, and the Liberty Party. They opposed extending slavery to other states, supported internal improvement programs and moderate tariffs, and also free land for all settlers. The phrase, free soil, free speech, free labor, and free men, became a staple when conveying their core beliefs. Although they did get a few people into the House of Representatives, they never won a presidential election. The Boston Tea Party was a relatively recent political party that disbanded in 2012. They were primarily advertised as a libertarian party and thought that the government should reduce the size and power at all levels. They were also quite active in attempting to convince the U.S. to withdraw troops from both enemy and ally territories, and were one of the only parties to call for an investigation into the events of 9/11. Current political parties. In terms of political parties that are current and active, the most prominent are the bipartisan communities of the Republican and Democratic parties. The Republican side is often called the GOP, for Grand Old Party, and is a very conservative right-wing party that favors a lot of the traditional values in the United States, including the right to bear arms, military expansion and the industrial expansion, and the traditional definitions of marriage and life, which has led to a conflict in a number of social and legal spheres involving abortion, same-sex marriages, LGBT soldiers and the military's treatment of them, and issues related to death penalties and physician-assisted suicide. They also have been generally strong libertarian economic ideals associated with them and are social conservatives in comparison to their Democratic opposition. There is also a trend in those who support the Republican Party to be more spread out in terms of geographic location, especially in rural areas. While the presidents past and present have all espoused a religious stance, this has been considerably more overt among conservatives, including George Bush and runner-up Mitt Romney, who lost the election to Barack Obama. In contrast, the Democratic Party actually traces back to Jefferson and the Democratic Republican Party and was originally a form of classic liberalism. Nowadays, they are a bit more moderate but still focus on trends of equality, both socially and economically. This includes advocating for welfare, something that the Republicans tend to oppose. They also encourage labor unions and social programs and generally take a more involved role in politics and the economic makeup of the country, again in contrast to Republicans who tend to favor a more individualistic, capitalist-driven worldview. Historically, they were huge supporters of the New Deal because this was one of the first times that the government had both a strong and direct influence in the labor markets and that the economy had been geared towards trying to ensure equality. In general, the Democratic Party has also been associated with more socially conscious approaches to government and daily life, which has included support for same-sex marriages and abortions, opposition to torture and regulation on gun control, and a strong emphasis on immigration and making it easier to gain citizenship. Politically, they support cutting some funding to the military expenditures and imposing carbon taxes, while the conservative leadership generally opposes this in favor of keeping industry active. As a result of all this, many minorities are often attracted to the Democratic perspective because it is more inclusive. There is also an independent category in the current American government. This usually involves people who do not believe wholly in the policies or beliefs of either the Democrats or the Republicans. That said, many of them often do share certain loyalties to one party or another. In the most recent election, this was demonstrated by Bernie Sanders, who was running on his own platform that was geared towards a more leftist interpretation of Democratic thought. There are also some lesser-known parties that include the Green Party. In the States, this is a very progressive far-left party that has a number of views similar to the Democratic Party, but is far from moderate. They have a very strong ecological, environmentally friendly stance and advocate for grassroots democracy. This is in contrast to the major political parties who prefer a very centralized form of governing. For the Greens, decentralized government are considered more beneficial, not only in terms of stabilizing and maintaining set economies, but also in giving freedom to citizens. They are also huge proponents of social and equal rights, including a woman's right to choose, nonviolence, global justice, and women's rights in general. The other main independent party currently is the Libertarian Party, which is more like the classic liberals from a few hundred years ago. Their policies include support for laissez-faire economics and abolishment of welfare. In many ways, they have both conservative views on a number of issues, believing that capitalism is both good and should be exercised, and that the state does not have an obligation or responsibility to bail out banks or individuals. On the other hand, they also list abolishing the IRS and gold standard, lowering taxes, and allowing people to opt out of their Social Security, thereby decreasing the influence that the federal government would have in the lives of the populace. Like the Greens and Democrats, they also have strong views on eradicating the death penalty and supporting same-sex marriages. An interesting fact about the Libertarian Party is that they were the first party to cast an electoral vote for a woman. Presidential election controversies. It seems as though election controversies are a modern plight, but they date back far into American history. The 1876 election between Rutherford B. Hayes, a Republican, and Samuel Tilden, a Democrat, is still one of the most controversial elections in U.S. presidential history. At first count, Tilden won the necessary electoral votes needed to win, but there were still 20 electoral votes not yet decided in Florida, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Oregon. Tilden needed one more electoral vote to officially secure the election, while Hayes needed all 20. There was no precedent to deal with these type of electoral vote issues yet, so a commission was established to assess the results. The commission voted along party lines and gave Hayes all 20 votes. And an informal compromise was reached known as the Compromise of 1877. The Compromise of 1877 required that Republicans withdraw forces from the South, effectively ending the Reconstruction era and beginning a new era of oppression for blacks in the South. Much more recent, however, was the controversial election of 2000 between Republican George W. Bush and Democrat Al Gore. Gore won the popular vote, but the election was rife with accusations of voter fraud and impediments to voting, specifically in Florida. The election was so close in Florida, 537 votes, that a recount was requested and required. Litigation was inevitable, and eventually the case made it to the Supreme Court, where the court ruled in Bush's favor 5-4. This marked the fourth election in U.S. history where the winner of the election received fewer votes than the opponent. A similar issue had arisen with the most recent 2016 election, where the declared winner, Donald Trump, received fewer votes than his opponent, Hillary Clinton. Trump was declared an unlikely winner, but the election has been marred by accusations of Russian interference. At the time of writing, the issue of Russian interference has not yet been resolved. America Today. After the attacks on 9/11, there was a paradigm shift in how America viewed terrorism. Newly elected President George W. Bush led Americans to believe that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and was complicit in al-Qaeda's attack on U.S. soil. Iraq did not have WMDs, and the information spread about this was false, though it led to war with Iraq, sometimes known as the Second Persian Gulf War. An insurgency against the occupation followed, and the U.S. finally withdrew all troops in 2011. Most recently, ISIS has waged wars and follows a fundamentalist doctrine. ISIS, also known as the Islamic State, forced the Iraqi president to step down in 2014 and claims authority over Muslims worldwide, though this is clearly not the case. America and the world now face threats from this group, and it is believed that they have operations in at least 18 countries. Prior to the war with Iraq was the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001. The goal was to snuff out Taliban rule and take down al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. U.S. Navy SEALs killed bin Laden in 2011, and NATO began taking measures to withdraw from the region. The United States ended major combat operations in 2014, but left some forces in place to combat terrorism in the region. As of 2016, there are still American forces in Afghanistan after the original proposed withdrawal date. At home, globalism has led to the loss of many economic opportunities for Americans and industries that were once the backbone of the American economy. The 2008 housing bubble crisis became a huge source of interference in the economy, and though it was labeled only as a recession, it had a similar effect to the Great Depression in that many people lost their jobs. This prompted a movement in the U.S. to disparage big banks that were too big to fail, and was the catalyst for the Occupy Wall Street movement, which, although it lost steam, cemented economic inequality as a significant issue in the cultural milieu. Additionally, industry and manufacturing, which had catapulted the United States to the forefront of global economics in the early part of the 20th century, started to migrate to lower-wage countries in East and Southeast Asia. The major power likely to challenge America in the future, China, arose from the ashes of Japanese rule and decades of brutal communist rule to become the world's manufacturer. Others have chipped away at sectors once dominated by America, such as automobiles and steel. The world is becoming more multipolar instead of bipolar or monopolar, i.e., the U.S. as the only superpower. However, American influence is still widely felt. Global newspapers are more likely to report on American politics than American newspapers are to report on foreign politics. The United States still maintains a dominant position in technology, and the country knows retaining that position is essential to maintaining global dominance. Culturally, American music and film are still widely enjoyed throughout the globe, and the country's central position has given it the ability to spread its language. The American spread is a continuation of the British Empire's influence on language across the world. Much of the world uses English as its medium of communication, and the United States was in the right position at the right time to capitalize on the changes enveloping the planet. In the 2010s, the multipolar world continued to show signs of strain, and the Pax Americana has fractured. The wars in Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq have destabilized already contentious areas. The United States suffered its worst attack on its own soil since Pearl Harbor in 2001 and has since been on a quest to rid the world of terrorism. Moreover, state actors have started to conduct cyber intrusions, and the new front will emerge from the same medium that allowed America to spread its influence into every home and hand. Fun fact. Regarding the belief that technology is all important to security and dominance, it was illegal to import encryption from the United States until the 1990s. Having seen the role encryption played in World War II and the Cold War, the United States classified encryption under the munitions codes because it could be used as a weapon. Only in the 1990s, with the spread of the Internet, did it become legal to export it. The encryption we all use every day for secure communication over the internet was, at one point, not permitted as a technological export. Misconceptions. The concept of universal health care was not just an idea supported by the Democrats. In today's political climate, the idea of universal health care seems like a Democratic ideal, not one of the whole country, as not a single Republican voted in favor of the Affordable Care Act, nicknamed Obamacare. However, in the 1970s, President Richard Nixon was in favor and made a great push to create an affordable insurance plan for all Americans. Congress was also in favor, but then the Watergate scandal broke, as did Nixon's dreams of making his goal of universal health care come true. Can you believe this really happened? Which one of these was a short-lived political party? A. The Love Party. B. The Vegetarian Party. C. The Horse and Buggy Party. D. The Power Party. In 1948, John Maxwell ran for president under the American Vegetarian Party. Apparently, Americans were not interested in a platform based on the philosophy of a non-meat diet. John Maxwell was also English-born and thus declared ineligible to run. Which is the oldest political party still in existence? A. The Tea Party. B. The Republican Party. C. The Democratic Party. D. The Liberal Party. The Democratic Party is the oldest active political party, originally established in 1792 as the Democratic Republicans. Not only is it America's oldest active political party, it is among the oldest active political parties in the world. History has its eyes on us today. The issues of the past have followed America to its present. Although the Cold War is long past, the shadow still remains. Russian and American relations are still tense, and many of the issues in the Middle East originally stemmed from outrage at American interference in the 1970s and 1980s. If the choice were yours, would you rather keep the Electoral College as it is or change the system? The Electoral College primarily operates on a plurality, meaning that most states have a winner-take-all approach. Just because a candidate wins the popular vote nationwide does not guarantee that the candidate will become president. While some states have rules in place that split electoral votes in proportion to the election, there is no consistent rule on how individual states distribute electoral votes. Usually, it's all or nothing. Five elections have seen the winner of the election lose the popular vote. This has been American History, U.S. History, an overview of the most important people and events. The history of the United States, from Indians to the contemporary history of America. Written by William D. Willis. Narrated by Ronald Fox. Copyright 2017 by Lean Stone Publishing. Production copyright 2017 by Lean Stone Publishing.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.